This is the Watford Gap. The Watford Gap with Adam Leventhal.
Hi there. Hope you're well. We're back for episode 6. This is Adam Leventhal. We're in the Watford Gap bunker, protected from the wicked and the wet world outside. I'm hoping to cheer and warm you up with prizes that you will want to get your hands on and guests that you will want to hear from.
Coming up,
the Sports Pages is a must for Watford Football Club fans. We feature Tales from the Vicarage live, a sold-out event, but we have two prize tickets up for grabs in the first of two competitions on this episode. The second is linked to our focus on football cliches. We meet the man behind the cult Twitter account as he deconstructs footballing commentary.
It's one of those cliches that has taken root, is never going to disappear, but yet it's completely wrong.
The twang bring the music and Aston Villa memories to cherish.
I've got two framed pictures of him up in my house at the moment. He's the magic man, isn't he? He's amazing.
While the stats furnace is hot with discussion of Manchester United and the worst ever Premier League title defence.
If they do indeed finish outside the Champions League places this season, it's a sort of crisis really for Man United financially. So they might have to bring in Ferguson to help Moyes again.
The Sports Pages.
So we start with the Sports Pages on this month's episode. And we focus on a series of books that are a must for Watford Football Club fans. They are called Tales from the Vicarage, now into its second volume, but now also preparing for its first live event, which is at the Watford Palace Theatre on March the 23rd. It's called Tales from the Vicarage Live. It's a sellout, and there are four reasons why. Because former managers Malky Mackay, Sean Dyche and Eddie Boothroyd, plus the club's record goal scorer Luther Blissett, are all going to be guests alongside myself. I'm hosting the event. It's sure to be a revealing night of all of those men's tales of their time at Vicarage Road. It's sold out within 48 hours and it's the first of hopefully many events planned for the future. But the good news is that I have two tickets to give away right here on the Watford Gap, and the competition is very, very simple. You have to tweet at the Watford Gap and tell me why you and a friend deserve to get those two tickets. All you have to do is include the hashtag TFTVLive, Tales from the Vicarage Live, TFTVLive, which is also incidentally going to be used on the night of the event, and tell me why you deserve to get those very, very precious tickets. The competition will close on Friday, the 21st of February, and the best reason wins the tickets. Get to it.
The Watford Gap. With Adam Leventhal.
Now it's time to talk football cliches, and I'm rather warily going to introduce our guest because I'm very wary about what I'm allowed to say, how I say it, and if I'm offending anyone by saying it in the way that I'm about to say it. Adam Hurry is the man behind the Twitter account Football Cliches, and he joins us on the Watford Gap now. Have I done okay so far?
Yeah, absolutely. The one thing I absolutely won't do is criticise a football media professional for what he's coming out with, so you're perfectly safe.
Excellent. Now, just tell people if they don't already follow you. I mean, 43,100 people follow you on Twitter.
Oh, is it? Oh, right. Yes. So no idea.
It's ticked on. So just tell people exactly what's the premise behind the Twitter feed.
Okay. Well, I guess the first thing I feel like I should justify is that football cliches have a negative connotation. The idea that a cliche is an idea that's tired, old, and overused. It's not always the case. I think football cliches can be three things. They can be something that's indisputably true, so it's cemented itself over the years as a perfectly good phrase to describe something in football. Those are the sort of things I have no problem with whatsoever. Then there are phrases that are kind of like truisms, if you like, things that have just they sound right, they sound good, And that's the reason they've stayed in the football language. So an example of that would be, if anything, he's hit the ball too well. So everybody knows what that means, but it has no basis in any logic whatsoever. So they're interesting. And then there's a third example of a football cliche, which are things that are just completely wrong. And they're worthy of ridicule. So one of my least favourite, if I could describe it as such, would be when commentators describe penalties as a lottery, which is an utter nonsense. And it sends me into a fit of rage on Twitter. It's when the caps lock gets out, because they're anything but. Yeah, whoever you play for, be it England or whoever, they're simply not a lottery. They're a test of skill, and the sooner we realise that, the better. So that's what the aim is. There's my three directives right there.
Now, I wouldn't be talking to you if I wasn't a fan myself. So I'm obviously a fully signed up member of your following, and I do very much enjoy what you do. Now, I just want to know where it all started and why you've got such a fascination with sort of picking people up and highlighting these cliches that just seem to be latent in every part of sports broadcasting and the media.
Well, I guess it all started off with the childhood ambition to be a football commentator, which extinguished quite quickly when I realised I didn't have the bottle to do it. So one thing I should also make clear is that I have all sympathy for existing commentators, because they do incredibly hard jobs. So I try not to take too many cheap shots unless they really deserve it. And then perhaps a wasted childhood of probably too many VHS cassettes of goals videos. 101 Great Goals, for example, is the godfather of all football videos.
And
I genuinely fell in love with the art of football commentary, or good football commentary. And then after that, I just started to pick up on phrases that were mindlessly repeated either by commentators or pundits or football fans. And it was that mindless repetition. It was just, you know, that kind of automatic set of phrases that people would use to describe football that really kind of piqued my interest. So that was the pure motivation for it. Just things that football fans say, words that they would never use in any other part of life. You know, an example would be derisory for a transfer bid that isn't quite enough for one of their players. I don't think I've ever used the word derisory in any other walk of life. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, there's an element of linguistics to it, but I hate to paint it as a you know, academic study, but yeah, there is an element of that.
Have you ever used the word adjudged?
No.
Outside of the footballing arena.
Absolutely not. Where does the extra A come from? It is certainly a word, but no one uses the word adjudged. The same is with lackadaisical. It isn't lackadaisical, it's lackadaisical. Where has that S come from? Football just re-engineering language for its own purposes is wonderful, really.
Do you have a name for your followers? I was trying to think on the way to the studio, what would be the name for your football,
what you mean,
cliche? And I was thinking football clichites, but I don't think that comes together particularly well.
that's interesting turn of phrase. What, so you're thinking along the lines of a football cliche's equivalent of believers then?
Yes, exactly.
No, I don't try and commodify my followers in that way. We're all equal, I suppose. I haven't thought of them as some sort of cult following that hang on every word I say. That would be incredibly egotistical, and I never dream of thinking of them that way.
So it happens, doesn't it?
No.
No, but do they help you? Do they flag things up and you actually go, oh yeah, I can't believe he said that, and then you'll put it out on your feed? Or is it all original? Because I just can't imagine how much you would need to be watching sport and football all the time for you to generate so much information and so much material.
Well, it's amazing how interesting I find games that I would never normally have watched in the past. So I do pretty much watch every game that I'm available to, and it's made games like that, and I don't want to mention teams because I'll make them sound boring, but games I would never normally watch have become far more interesting because I get to listen to every word that comes out of commentators' mouths. And it's a sad way to spend your life, but you know, you've got to have a hobby after all.
Before we do a competition, which you've kindly agreed to do, is almost try and pick your biggest cliche crimes. And I know you've mentioned a few, but what is the top one that every time you hear it, you think, why has that person not been led out of that stadium and told to just completely forget about a career in football commentary?
Well, I've never damned someone with such horrendous criticism. But the lottery of a penalty shootout has to be the worst. Because it's one of those cliches that has taken root, is never going to disappear, but yet it's completely wrong. So and you know, if we're being remotely serious about this, it encourages a train of thought that is only going to be detrimental to the future of English football, because we're never going to score penalties if people are happy in the idea that it's a complete twist of fortune that you should score from 12 yards almost unopposed with no pressure on you whatsoever. Another one would be that hitting the woodwork, as I'm not allowed to put it, is unlucky. Why? The goals don't move. It's not unlucky. It's just a thing that happens, you know. So yeah, factually incorrect football cliches, as charming as they may be, and as ingrained in the football language as they may be, they're a load of rubbish.
Perfect. I like that. That's summed up very, very succinctly. Now let's get on to this competition. Now, for people who don't know, Football Cliches is not only a Twitter entity, it is also a website, and you can get some rather dashing t-shirts on there with, obviously, Football Cliches on the front, some on the back. And the prize which we have agreed on with Adam is that the winner of this competition will win a pick of the t-shirts on the site, just one t-shirt, but you have a relatively difficult question for people to decipher, or perhaps it's very, very easy, and you can just lay that question in front of our followers, and then people will have to answer it on Twitter. So Adam, fire away.
Okay, let me paint the picture first. A team is two or three goals down in a cup tie, and in the dying moments, they managed to get a goal back, but it looks like it won't quite be enough. So the commentator claims that it's a case of...
Perfect. Okay. So people have to send their answers via Twitter to @TheWatfordGap with the complete phrase. When a team is either two or three goals down and they score a goal late, the commentators often consider it to be a case of, and then if you just send those words through to @TheWatfordGap, we will put them all into a hat, or, well, that's a cliche in itself because it's not a hat anymore, is it? It would be a bag.
Lottery.
It's okay, a lottery. Okay. It's actually a lottery. Fantastic. It's a lottery. And we will pick out the winner, and then we will celebrate you on Twitter in around about a week's time. Now, Adam, I really, really appreciate you coming on. Very, very good luck with the Football Cliches growing followership of clichites, and I do wish you well in the future. Thank you very much for coming on the Watford Gap.
Cheers, Adam.
The Stats Furnace.
So the familiar crackle of the Stats Furnace has returned to the Watford Gap. It can only mean one thing, and Opta's Matt Furness is back on the show for the first time in 2014. It's a very belated Happy New Year to you. How are you?
I'm not so bad, Adam. How are you?
I'm very good. I'm very good indeed. Now, since we last spoke, you kindly took a winner on the Watford Gap around the Opta offices for a tour, which he won on one of the previous episodes. How did that little tour go down with Sam?
Yeah, it was good. I think he got quite a lot out of it. It's sort of an area he's interested in, maybe sort of looking for work in the future, because he's a university student at the moment. I'm not going to lie and say it was like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory or anything like that. But I think he's quite interested in how we actually sort of analyse the games and do things editorially. It worked out fine.
Do you find a lot of people, when you tell them that you work for Opta, do they get all sort of doughy-eyed and think, oh, I'd love to be like Matt? I'd love to be like Matt.
Yeah, they always claim, oh, you've got the dream job, because they think that all I do is just watch football matches all day.
Yes.
There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah.
I think working in football, like, your hobby is always good. It's sort of nice to get up and enjoy what you do every day. You probably have the same sort of feeling with Sky Sports News, but a lot of people do sort of are slightly envious of working in football, but it's not all it's cracked up to be sometimes. It is hard work.
Yeah, right. Never is. No, but I get exactly the same thing, so I know exactly where you're coming from. Now, let's crack on with our little area of debate on this podcast. And it's about title defences. And obviously everyone knows about Manchester United's woes at the moment and the fact that things haven't clicked under David Moyes. But I'm just trying to work out statistically if they are in line for the worst ever Premier League title defence. Statistically, are they on the way to that?
Could well be, yeah. Only one team has ever had such a sort of big fall from grace in the Premier League. That was Blackburn. After their title win in 94-95, the following season they actually finished seventh as well and won 28 points fewer than they did in their title winning season. And that obviously was their only Premier League victory, title win, and they've sort of gone downhill a little bit since. There's been sort of only seven of the previous 20 Premier League champions have retained their title in the following season. So it is hard to sort of to do that. And of those seven teams, six of them are Man United. So they will sort of, they're in for a sort of culture shock now. It's a different period in the club, the transitional phase, really. And if they keep up their sort of average points per game ratio from this season, they will finish 27 points lower than they did last season. So it's almost as bad as Blackburn. And it could be worse if they don't pick up their results soon.
I suppose it's very difficult to put oneself into the shoes of David Moyes, because he's replacing the legend that is Sir Alex Ferguson. But it wasn't all plain sailing for Sir Alex when he took over, was it? So I suppose you can have some sympathy with David Moyes.
No, yeah. I mean, looking at Alex Ferguson's first 25 league games in charge of United, he actually only won 10 of those. Moyes has won 12. So, Moyes, let's go out there and say Moyes is better than Ferguson. he's actually, it's always going to be a tough sort of transitional phase. And I mean, I don't think, even though they splashed a lot of cash on Mata, they're in the sort of strongest financial position compared to Manchester City, Chelsea, possibly Arsenal, even though they don't want to spend any money. So it's going to be tough for them now. And it actually took Ferguson 32 league games to reach 12 wins. So, and Moyes did that after 23. It's obviously different periods, and it's hard to compare these. But it hasn't been a great start. But given time, I think Moyes can get it right. He needs to bring in his own players. He needs to sort of get rid of the dead wood that Ferguson probably didn't do towards the end of his tenure. It's no sort of masking the fact that it is their worst start to a league season since 1990-91. And they ended sixth that season. And we all know they ended up winning the title 2 years later in the Premier League. So, yeah, I mean, it could take time, but I think eventually they'll return to the top of the Premier League in many years to come.
Just in general terms, and I mean, not necessarily speaking, you know, as an official Opta spokesperson, but just from your own opinion, having, you know, analysed statistics through the years, when people compare Sir Alex Ferguson and when he took over and the time that he was given, do you think Manchester United are right to be doing the same thing now? And if so, do you think that David Moyes will be able to survive in that job for a long period of time if Manchester United aren't winning the title?
I don't think the pressure on managers is even comparable now to what it was in the 90s and 80s. You see already this season, I think it's maybe now seven or eight managers that have already been removed from their post in the Premier League. So there is a culture of, as soon as things go wrong, almost panicking and getting rid of a manager and trying something else. I think Moyes, I can see he will stay to the end of the season. I think Man United aren't going to get anything out of removing him now. I think he's got a 5-year contract as well. So can they afford to pay him off? The Glazers obviously have added quite a lot of debt to Man United, so it could be an issue there. I think one thing that isn't helping Moyes, in a personal view, is that Ferguson is still sort of lingering behind the scenes. It's almost similar to when Roy Hodgson was at Liverpool and Dalglish was hanging around and then eventually sort of got the job. I'm not saying Ferguson will get the job again, but if Moyes, if they do indeed finish outside the Champions League places this season, it's a sort of crisis really for Man United financially. So they might have to bring in Ferguson to help Moyes again. But I think they need, personal views, they need to keep Moyes on and sort of try and build something again and start from the bottom. I mean, it's, as I said before, it's a transitional phase and it's going to take time.
If you're a Manchester United fan listening, as a unit, both Matt and I can only apologise for probably not helping your mood at all, because it's been rather doom and gloom for Manchester United. But in a couple of months' time, when you return, because you come on every other month onto the Watford Gap, it may well be all plain sailing for Manchester United. And if it is, then we will be the first to congratulate David Moyes and Manchester United on reviving themselves. But at the moment, they are on course for the worst title defence in Premier League history, which is an unwanted tag. Matt, appreciate your time once again. Thank you very much for coming on.
No worries. See ya.
The Watford Gap.
You've guessed it. It's time for our musical guest this week, who is Phil Etheridge, who's the lead vocalist from the band The Twang, and they are back with a new album in March, which goes by the name of Neon Twang. We'll talk about that in a minute, and we'll speak to Phil very shortly, but let's just hear some of the new single, which is out now, Larry Lizard. Larry Lizard made a threat with the scissors and they went back to the party. Knees knocking and he pulled up the stockings and finished off the Bacardi. The night was swinging, Larry heard Bobby singing, oh, come on, I ain't in the morning. Bobby dances Susie on it, but jacuzzi is the crowd, he's passing the doorway. So Phil, tell us about Neon Twang, the album. It's on its way. Why is it called Neon Twang? It's a bit of a blast from the past. That was your original name, wasn't it?
It's nice to go back to that, and we've had big Neon Twang t-shirts made up and backed up, and that's what it feels like. But it feels really good, actually. It feels the right time, so... Kind of in my mind, I always thought that if we ever do, like, a best of... I know that sounds a bit smelly, but if we ever did, like, a best of, like, we'd call it Neon Twang, but we thought it was the right time to use now, so...
Yeah, because this is your fourth album now, isn't it? So it's... I suppose if it was going to be your... self-titled album, that would have been the first one, so it's quite nice to do it a little bit down the line.
Yeah, I think a few bands do it that way as well. I guess sometimes it's just hard coming up with a title for the sake of it, you know, as well. And every time we've put an album out, we've kind of talked about maybe doing, like, you know, it's self-titled. And just especially with this one, I feel like we've really, I know everyone says this, you know, every time a new record comes out, but I feel like we've really, like, caught something. And I feel there's a real innocence and that, like, back to basics of, like when we was making the first album, there was no like interference from people, and I don't know, it just feels right. Definitely feels right.
Why do you think that happens? Because I guess when you're starting off, you're fresh, you're full of beans, and does your, you know, as someone who's an artist, someone who's writing the songs, do you almost get polluted by all the politics and all the influences that you get around you, and you have to just strip that back? And I guess that's what you're doing now. Is that fair?
I think with us, and you can't really blame us, I think there was a lot of money thrown at us, and you kind of just get carried away, you know. And I think everyone's patting you on the back, telling you it's going to be great there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even when I was questioning, like, things in the studio, first album and stuff, I was like, oh, are you sure? Little things like, are you sure about the man claps, you know, they're a bit smelly, like. And there was like, no, man, it's going to be great, you're going to kill it. And I think that whole, like, you can get, like, your vision's cloud, you know, you can get a bit of a cloudy view during that time. Because you do start to believe the hype as such, you know.
Tell us about the new single, because it's called Larry Lizard, and you're in fine fettle in the video. Who is Larry?
You'd have to ask John that. John wrote that track. He brought it down. It was, and we come up with this silly idea for a video of me being tad deranged and then helping me become more deranged. But it's not really a single. It was kind of just like a taster from the record, in my opinion. I kind of just wanted to. Like, we put the Wobble out last year. Just for the taste and just to give people a vibe of where we're going, really, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Wobble's not is a complete contrast to the video for Larry Lizard, because I guess that was one that you had to sort of, you couldn't say, oh yeah, I'll feature in the Wobble and I'll do exactly what that lovely woman's doing in it.
Yeah, she's amazing. Well, actually, Simo, who's our newest member, he done that video all on himself, you know, on a real like shoestring budget, and I think the Wobble videos turned out great. She was incredible, but we thought we'd try and up the ante a little bit with Larry, and it's good. But we've just realised we've blown all our video budget now, and we're not sure what we're going to do for the next track. To be fair.
Right, let's talk about football. And I don't know if you want to talk about football at the moment, because it just seems that it's a bit of a lull around Aston Villa, your team. Is that fair, do you think? It's just there's no spark at the moment, is there?
I think there's a lot of teams in the same position. I mean, I've only been down a few times this season. I went to, like, the Sunderland game, which is possibly the worst game of football I've ever witnessed, the 0-0. And then I went on Boxing Day against Crystal Palace, which was probably the second worst game I've ever seen. In fact, that might be worse, because they did us in the last minute.
Yeah.
With that, like, wonder strike. He was a sub as well, wasn't he? But, but I went up against the Baggies the other Wednesday, which was fun. And I think there's a... You know, it only takes a couple of wins, doesn't it? I know it's obvious and everyone says the same, but it only takes a couple of wins and people will be saying that we're going to get into Europe or whatever. You know, it's so tight, isn't it? You know, if you win two on the bounce, but I suppose it's winning those two on the bounce, but... I'm not too worried. I think there's far worse teams below us, you know. So,
how does the sort of the footballing breakdown work out in the band? Because you're quite sort of spread all within the Midlands region, aren't you?
Yeah, you can't choose your team, can you? Like, you know, you're born into, well, in my opinion, like, you know, all my family are Villa, and all John's family are Baggies, and all Saunders' family are Blues, and you know, and you can't, like. It's just a bit of banter, isn't it? You know, it's good. I don't really talk. They know the Villa and the Pride of the Midlands, and that's about it, really. We leave it there, as far as I'm concerned.
Who would you say would be your favourite ever Aston Villa player?
I always say Paul Mercer. I loved Mercer. I believe that there's obviously Paul McGrath, and, you know, but, like, Mercer, for me, I think if we had a Mercer now, it would make such a difference. That one player in the middle of the park that can pick out that pass, that match winning pass, basically. We haven't got that, and we haven't had it since Mercer, you know. And there's a lot of crabs, isn't there, in football, you know. And I think a player like, well, if it weren't for Gazette at the time, Mercer was probably one of the best, you know, best midfielders in the country, if not the second best to Gascoigne, you know. Hence why Hoddle took him instead of him in at 98, but Yeah, he was incredible, Mercer. His celebration at Arsenal as well, you know, his beer drinking celebration, and everything about him, you know, I quite like a troubled soul. And
And he's a really top man as well. I know that's sort of a bit of a cliche, saying he's a top player or he's a top man, but I see him quite a lot at Sky Sports, and he's so polite, he's very pleasant, he's always got time for people, and he was a great footballer as well, wasn't he?
Oh, he's my favourite. I mean, the Magic Man. I've got two framed pictures of him up in my house at the moment. He's the Magic Man, isn't he? He's amazing.
Yeah.
He was amazing. And as I say, if we could find, I mean, how much would he be worth now? If you could find that, you know, the next Mercer and get him at the Villa, you know, because I think he had a really good spell when he was, you know, when he was at Villa. I know it was late on, but. I think, because I've read a couple of his books, and I've read his book, you know, Heroes and Villains.
Yeah.
And he says himself, like, you know, he was playing really well and he was in a good zone under Gregory, and, you know.
When we've had musical guests on in the past, I've always asked them if they could pick a track for their team to come out to, what would it be? And it can be one of your own tracks, or it can be another one, or if you're happy with the one that you've got now, then that's fine. But if you could pick one off the top of your head, what would it be?
Oh man, you put me on the spot. I don't know, it'd probably have to be a twang tune.
Yeah, quite right. What would it be? Which one?
I'd go for Larry at the moment, just to get it out there. But yeah, it'd be a twang tune. I don't know which one, but oh god, I thought actually my dad said that they played one. They've played our tunes at half time.
Yeah.
In the past, like.
That must be amazing. Has that ever happened where you've been at a ground and there's, I mean,
no, no. No, because my dad's season ticket, you see, I only get to go, six or seven games a season. But he did say that once a year, by the way. And the lads have said that they played us at the Baggies as well, which it's like a dream come true, isn't it? It's like when you first hear yourselves on Match of the Day.
Yeah.
It's like, what it's all about, isn't it? It's what you've dreamt of.
It's been great talking to you about the musical side of things. I know you've got loads of dates coming up. So if people are listening to the podcast for the first time, where do they need to go to make sure that they can go and see you in the build-up to the release of the new album?
If they go to like our Facebook or thetwang.co.uk, I can't wait to get back out there and show them the new stuff, show them what we've been up to. So it's going to be good.
Phil, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks ever so much for having us, man.
Nice one. Take care.
So that's it for this episode of The Watford Gap. Once again, thank you very, very much for listening. Do send your feedback. Do get in touch at The Watford Gap. Tell your friends. Enter this episode's competitions and we will meet again, hopefully, some sunny day soon.
The Watford Gap. The Watford Gap is a 2011 style production.